What is going on, everybody, and welcome back to True Love and Orgasms. I'm your host, Dave, and with me, as always, is the woman of steel, the impenetrable, Bed Betty.
Hi, baby.
What's going on, babe?
I love how you introduced me.
Well, yeah.
Impenetrable. I don't think that's true.
Probably not, because you get penetrated all the time.
Ba-dum-bum.
We're here all week. Don't forget to tip your waitress. So, kind of a milestone couple of weeks here. Well, first, before we get into that, let's, you know, we've been off for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
And for a reason, you have undergone some surgery.
I did.
And you're still recovering. How do you feel?
I feel good. Just, you know, the day after I had the surgery, our son got me sick, so that didn't help. I'm still recovering from that, but I feel good.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't add to the good health.
Not at all.
Which, you know, it's what he does.
Yes.
But other than that, over the last, what do you say, like a month here?
Yes.
You've reached some pretty significant milestones.
Yes.
Starting with?
Gone through a lot. I stopped smoking.
Which is a huge deal. Anybody out there that is a current smoker or former smoker, you know, that's not the easiest thing to walk away from.
It is so hard. So difficult. Yeah.
So
it wasn't easy.
So there's been multiple attempts mm-hmm. over the last few years to be done with this.
Yeah.
What finally got you there to like say I'm done?
I think it was the so I've set many dates, and I'm sure many people who've tried quitting before have done that. But this time around, I think having to have this surgery done, the several cancer scares and all that shit, I told myself that's it. This is the date before the surgery. I want it to be done, and it was like a mental thing. I was just done. I don't know. I can't explain it. I was just done with it.
So I can relate to that. You know, when I quit probably 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'd smoked for probably close to 20 years.
Yeah.
And it was difficult. You know, it was always like, I like doing this. Mm-hmm. I'm good at it.
Yep.
Quitters never win, right?
Yep.
Just being stubborn about the whole thing. And what finally pushed me over the edge is, like, I got angry at it.
Right.
You know, I was severely overweight, you know, when I was working in the oil field. Well, I still am, but eating like shit, smoking mm-hmm. 2 packs of cigarettes a day, mm-hmm. drinking like an animal because we were just going out and shutting down bars every night. It's what we did.
Yeah.
And things like having to take a breath, like I was diving mm-hmm. into the ocean every mm-hmm. time I wanted to tie my boots.
Yeah.
And just not being able to make it upstairs on a rig.
Yeah.
Like, I've stopped 3 times to catch a breath. And finally, I just got angry with it, and I'm like, I'm fucking done with this.
Yeah.
And I was, you know. I've just, you know, relapsed a couple times in between, but
it was the same thing. Like, once I made up my mind that I was done with it, whenever I would try to smoke, it was like I was sick of myself. I was like, ugh, you're disgusting. You're this, you're that. You know, you can't even do this. And then I would smoke, like, I would take one drag of an entire cigarette, and then that's like $7 out the window. So, yeah, I was like, enough's enough. I think it was just all mental, really.
Yeah, coming out of New York State, well, how much is a pack of cigarettes right now? Like $14
Dude, it's almost
something?
$14, man.
$14 for yep. 20 Class A cigarettes.
Yep.
God damn.
No, 20 cancer sticks is what they are.
No, Class A. The more we talk about this, the more I feel like just
smoking.
One more. No, we shouldn't. That'd be bad. So now that you're on the other side of it, how do you feel?
I feel like shit. I'm just kidding. No, the difficult part is getting past, you know, the times that you wanted a cigarette the most, right? Everybody knows. Wake up, have your coffee and a cigarette. After you're done eating, after sex, it's like one of those things. So you have to replace that with something else, right?
After every breath you take.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
Well, you don't have to stand out in the cold anymore.
I tell you what, though, I feel more productive because instead of being outside, I'm doing something else, you know? So
that's a bonus. Too, the escape.
Yeah.
The escape is a big one to get over because, mm-hmm. like, you go somewhere or you're at work and it was an excuse to step out.
Right.
You're like, oh, I got to go smoke a cigarette. And nobody argued with you. It's just like, oh, yeah, fine. Go feed your addiction. Mm-hmm. You know? So springboarding off of that awesome, victory for mm-hmm. you. Another huge milestone for you. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Suboxone. I finished Suboxone after, let me see. I started taking it in 2016, December of 2016. And I also stopped that at the same time I stopped smoking. So a couple weeks ago. Yeah, after years of it.
And how has that been?
Fine. So I hated taking it from the beginning. Like I felt like, so when it comes to Suboxone, there are a lot of people that have different views on it, right? They don't think if you're taking Suboxone, they don't feel like you're clean. They don't feel like you're in recovery. And I say that's bullshit. Whatever recovery looks like to you, as long as you are not controlled by the substance that you were addicted to, then that's your journey. For me, I didn't want to be in it. I didn't want to be on Suboxone at all. And it took me, what year is this? 2023, 2016, 7 years? 7 fucking years. Well, 6 and 6 point something to get off of that. And I finally made up my mind that this was it. My doctor kept telling me, like, are you sure you want to? I'm like, listen, what you're prescribing me right now, I'm not even taking. I wasn't even taking what she was prescribing me.
Yeah, you were weaning yourself off further than what the doctor was prescribing.
Right. And this last time around, I think it had a lot to do with me stopping smoking too. I guess I was in that mindset. And when she was about to prescribe me the last time I saw her, I said, just don't send it in. And she just looked at me. She's like, what? I go, just don't send it in, because I'm already taking it when I remember it, when I remember to take it. Right now, it's just a mental thing. I go, I don't want to be on it. I don't like the way it tastes. I don't like the way it makes me feel. It's been way too long. And I think it's right now, it's just mind over matter. And that was basically it.
So I think their apprehension was,
they were afraid. Yeah.
A lot of people in a similar position to you.
Yeah.
They depend on it too much.
Yes.
And a lot of people never stop taking it. Mm-hmm. They need it constantly to feel some sort of attachment. They're always hanging on to some small part of the addiction, right?
They are, yes. But some of them, it's just normalcy, man. It's the only way they can feel normal, which I get.
So we'll stop right there. And anybody that's listening that is in recovery, and we're going to get into some more detail here about what you've been through, mm-hmm. you know, why you were on this in the first place, what right. led to it.
Absolutely.
There's years of therapy. Mm-hmm. There's years of
trial and error,
being associated with an addiction clinic mm-hmm. to get to this point. Don't just stop taking shit. If you need it, you keep taking it.
Yes.
All right. You work with your doctors and get to the root cause of why you are dependent on what you're dependent on, which we will also touch on as we go forward here. But I just wanted to get that out before somebody's like, oh, well, she fucking did it. I'm going to stop taking this shit. And the next thing you know, you're out in the street fucking whacked out on bath salts eating somebody's face.
Don't do that. No, I was heavily supervised. I had a support system. I had doctors. I had therapists, counselors. So, yeah, I had that support system in place before I decided to do any of that. So make sure you have that before you decide to get off of anything.
So let's start with this particular issue, why were you on Suboxone?
I was addicted to opiates. I was pill popping like a motherfucker.
So how did that start for you?
I have nerve damage on my right side, of my leg, and the doctor originally prescribed me Tylenol with codeine.
And this was the result of the car accident?
No, this was the result of an injury that happened when I was in junior high. A table full of scrap metal fell on my foot. I never told my parents about it. I never said anything about it. To avoid embarrassment, I acted like it was no big deal, lifted up the table, put everything back on the table. But when I went home that day, my foot was killing me, and I never told my parents about it. Fast forward into my 20s, whenever I would put anything over my right foot, it felt like pins and needles. And I went to get that checked, and as they were checking my foot and my leg and everything, they were like, you have nerve damage in your right leg. And it stemmed from that incident, because I never said anything. So it started off with Tylenol with codeine, made me sick to my stomach. And then that went up to Lortabs. And I started working at a restaurant for the first time in my life. Being on my feet for that amount of time with nerve damage was painful. So I'll never forget the day. And I always go back and I always refer to that day when it comes to my addiction, because that's how it began. I took out my pill bottle and I was about to take half of one, actually, because I was deathly afraid of taking pills of any kind at the time. And I took out the bottle and a coworker of mine said, what are you taking? And I said, oh, my medication, it's for pain. I have nerve damage on my right side. Man, when I look back on that, I feel so fucking naive, you know? And she goes, oh, I get those. I take those for my back. You should try taking two instead of one. And I'm like, no, are you crazy? I only take half of one, because a whole one makes me feel, you know, sleepy.
Because she was talking about feeling the high.
She was talking about feeling the high,
the pills,
which at the time I was not aware of. I look back on it, man, and I'm like, man, that was the devil. That was the devil. So, yeah, when she said that, I looked at her like she was crazy. And then fast forward a couple months being in the restaurant business. If you guys have ever been in the restaurant business on your feet all day, you already know. What she said kept ringing in my ear. Take two, take two, take two. And I did. One day I took two. And I'm like, holy shit. This is what she's talking about. It's that you don't feel anything. You don't feel shit. Not only did I not feel shit, I started feeling different things. I felt confident. I felt... Basically, every fucking drug that lies to you and tells you that you're one thing when it's really just a fucking lie, that's what these pills were telling me. That quickly escalated. You know, a lot of things started happening in my life around that time, and I used it as an escape. And then it turned into, it wasn't about getting high, it was about not getting sick.
Which is a pretty standard progression. When it comes to addiction, like at some point, especially with pills, you know, I have some experience myself. You know, there was some abuse that went on in my younger years. Like, yeah. It didn't escalate to anything crazy, but if you take them a lot, you need more.
Yeah.
Like, you don't feel that high anymore. And you got to keep taking more. And then next thing you know, you're chomping down 10, 15 pills and you're like, the fuck am I doing?
Yes.
You know? So when would you say things like really started to get out of hand?
So fast forward years down the line. This was, now mind you, when this happened, this whole situation with me and that coworker, it was in the early 2000s.
And this was like the heyday of pain management, and the opioid crisis wasn't a buzz term on the news. And
you
could go to the doctor and you could be like, man, I got a headache and here's a 6-month prescription for fucking Loratab or Oxycontin or whatever the case may be.
Baby, I was going to different doctors different doctors to get them.
A lot of people were, because and they weren't communicating.
Yeah, they weren't communicating. There wasn't that system in place yet. So that's what was happening. And this was all in an effort to avoid getting sick. Because anybody who's been in that situation, when you feel that withdrawal coming on, it is the scariest fucking thing you've ever felt in your life. You feel like you're fucking dying, basically. You feel like you're dying, and you will do anything to prevent that from happening, to prevent feeling that way. So I get that. I get that feeling. So I tried everything I could, and I'll never forget the day. I was at work. I was in an office setting at the time. I was what they call a functioning addict. I was still making a paycheck. I was working. I was doing my thing.
But you were also surrounded by people who were doing all the same shit.
Yes. So absolutely.
It was a buddy system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I started getting sick. I couldn't get anything from anybody. I couldn't find anything. I'm like, holy shit. I'm so sick of this. I'm so sick of feeling this way. I need help. I need to do something about this. And I looked everywhere. I looked everywhere for help. And then I found my first outpatient rehabilitation center. It was the first time that I had heard about Suboxone, because I didn't even know what that was. And then actually a coworker was the one that told me about it, because we used to swap pills all the time. It was a coworker. And he was like, I have Suboxone. I'm like, what the fuck is that? He was like, it'll help you feel normal. It helps you stay away from the opiates, and it'll help you.
So he wasn't trying to recover. He was just using the Suboxone to bridge the gap when he couldn't
get anything.
To bridge
the gap, yes. So he was using the Suboxone to bridge the gap, but whenever he got the opiates, he was doing the opiates. The Suboxone was just to hold him over until he got them, which I didn't know you could do, because if anybody who's been on Suboxone, when you take opiates on Suboxone, you're an idiot. You get fucking sick instantly. Instantly. So,
well, that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to,
yeah,
prevent the withdrawal and keep you from using.
Yes. Yes. And so I, like I said, I looked it up. I found a doctor. And I didn't know it at the time, but the doctor that I found was, what do you call them? A money thing where they just wanted the money from you and they would give
you
a script.
Are you talking about the rehab center?
Yeah. It wasn't even a rehab center. Basically, it was $75 to be seen, $250 for the script.
Just a cash grab.
Cash grab. There you go. There was nothing set in place for counseling. There was nothing, none of that shit. The second place I found was the doctor was basically running an insurance scam. He was charging insurance companies for whatever. I get a letter in the mail saying your doctor is being arrested or investigated for insurance fraud. You're dropped out of this location. Here's a 1 month script until you find another place. I'm like, what the fuck? This is place number two. And then the third place I found, basically the same situation, money grabbing, whatever. I was like, okay, I need to find a place, number one, that'll hold me accountable. Two, that gives a shit about their fucking patients. And three, a place that'll tell me why I started doing this in the first place. Like, yeah, it was the pain, but why did I keep doing it? And I needed to know that. So and then I did. I found a place that gave a shit, held me accountable, and called me out on my bullshit. And they actually gave a shit about their patients.
So what was your real, like, come to Jesus moment to stop this? Because you do understand that very few people on their own come to a point where they're like, all right, I have to get help.
I wanted to break the cycle, I guess.
You knew you were killing yourself.
Absolutely. With every pill I took, I knew that this could be my last one.
So what is standout for that is, I mean, in my experience at least, not a lot of people can do that. You know, just that initial, the fact that the first one failed, the second one failed, but you kept going.
It's not easy.
That's a big deal. Like, not a lot of people in that position that far down the road of addiction can do that for themselves without any help.
There are some people that don't have the help, that don't have the support.
You were one of them.
Yeah.
You know, so at this point, this is years before us. You're still with your ex-husband. Mm-hmm. Where was he on this?
He didn't know.
He had no clue whatsoever. You don't think he had any inclination that you had a problem?
He suspected. He was told many times by different people, but he never asked me about it.
So let's unpack that real quick. Do you think that was the right move? Because I believe you told me that after the fact, you guys had a conversation about it.
We did.
And he said something that was...
He said he knew about it, but he was waiting for me to come to him.
Do you think that was a good idea?
No. No.
So somebody outside of everything comes to you and says, hey, I think my partner has a problem. I know my partner has a problem. All these people have come to me. I found shit hidden in the house. Do I say something?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's life or death.
It is life or death. And it's also at the sake of your relationship. Now, everything else aside between you two, right? Do you feel there was an effect that your addiction affected your relationship?
Absolutely.
In what way?
In every way. When you're in the throes of addiction, that's all you care about. Your significant other doesn't matter. Your kids don't matter. The only thing that matters is not getting sick. That's it. And no, as much as you care about your family, your children, your significant other, your mom, who you don't want to hurt if something were to happen to you, the only thing on your mind is preventing from getting sick. The high is not even a factor anymore.
So that's something I think a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah.
And I was one of them at one point. Now, mm-hmm. I've done my share of partying, mm-hmm. and I've messed with some stuff that I probably shouldn't have messed with. But yeah. I mean, the worst thing I ever dealt with addiction was nicotine,
mm-hmm.
right? Doing harder drugs and partying back in my self-destructive years when I was going through all kinds of crazy shit. I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
I knew I was self-medicating and I was hiding from the real problem. But when I was finally like hit that point of maturity, I was like, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
And I just stopped.
Yeah. And most people can't do that.
I thought they could. No. So that's where my ignorance came in. So when everybody's like, dude, I can't stop, or they keep relapsing and this and that, I'm like,
and you're like, just stop.
You're fucking weak.
Yeah.
That's how I viewed it, right? Yep. And it wasn't until, I guess I was having a better understanding as I got older.
Mm-hmm.
But once you and I got together, and I want to say I came along halfway through your recovery process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say that you just hit a point in recovery. You're like, I'm done. I'm good. I'm fixed. This is it's a lifelong thing. You're not going to, you're always going to be, quote, in recovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to have to fight that demon inside. As we went along and I learned about your addiction and I learned about what you were going through, and then we started delving into why did you choose to do this?
Right.
Which ultimately, it starts off with a choice, mm-hmm. right? Nobody is just immediately addicted except like maybe babies that are born because their mother was using or something. But
shit, the first time I even felt withdrawal symptoms, you're the one that made me aware of it. We were working at the restaurant then. This was how many years ago?
Yeah, for those who don't know, there's two tiers to our relationship. With a 20-year gap in between, and we'll tell that story one day. But that was that pills?
I mean, that was
there was a lot going on.
That was a mixture.
There was a lot going on in those days.
It was a restaurant business, man.
Yeah, anybody that's worked in a restaurant's,
you know what we mean.
I don't know if it's still like that. I would assume it is. But you can make decent money and there's no drug tests. So if you like to party, that's the place to be. You know. Fuck, I remember a case of beer in the cooler, a plate full of Coke, smoking weed out back.
Yeah.
it was just, yeah.
The movie Waiting is not a lie. Every character in that movie
exists in the restaurant business. Actually, in my experience, they exist in pretty much every job.
Every job,
like, there's all the, like, the characters stay the same, but the faces change kind of thing.
Yes, yes.
We were talking about that recently, and we're like, oh, this dude is like this dude at the other company, because a bunch of us came from one company to another company. It's like, I told you, man. The characters are all the fucking same.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. You know what's funny, too, is I grew up in a family, siblings addicted, you know, the whole, you know.
There is a genetic aspect to this.
For sure. Yeah. I grew up telling myself, I will never do that because I will never put my mom through what they put my mom through.
Well, there's that, right? And the religious, ideals that you were brought up with.
The
but
guilt.
That's the thing here. Addiction. Nobody's untouchable.
Nope. Does not care.
On that, I mean, talk about some of the people that you were in group with. It wasn't all just junkies and street people.
No. So originally, you know, growing up with addictions, I grew up with it in my family. Grew up watching it, grew up looking at it, grew up seeing it, and my mom dealing with it, my dad dealing with it, with siblings going through it. And I grew up telling myself that will never be me, because that was anyone who's never dealt with it. You have a thought in your head of what addiction looks like, right? And you immediately think junkie, dirty, all that shit. My first encounter in a group meeting, in a group setting, with other people who were addicted was a rude awakening. I sat in a group meeting where there was a soldier, a CEO of a company, a nurse, a doctor, an attorney, basically people from all walks of life. And they were all there for addiction counseling, for addiction help, for addiction recovery. And it woke me up big time. It's like, addiction does not discriminate. It does not care where you are from, who you are, your background. It does not give a fuck. I learned that real quick.
Again, it's another big misunderstanding. Everybody assumes, you know, there's an arrogance of, well, that could never happen to me. And
absolutely.
I've always used the analogy. I'm like, hey, we're all a bottle of vodka away from flying off the fucking rails, right? And this ties into mental health as well.
Yes.
So many of these problems, okay, it may have started because there was an injury or some pain that needed to be dealt with.
It's much deeper.
But it's always deeper. So
much deeper
than
that.
If we fast forward to you and I reconnecting and starting our life together, you told me about all this, that you were, you know, in recovery, that you had technically graduated the program, but you were still seeing your counselor, which I was like, okay, that's a pretty good idea. That's commendable. Like, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
And then we started getting into other things.
Right.
Other aspects of your life, traumas that you'd experienced. And once again, another episode. We'll get into that. But have we got into that? I don't think we have yet. But I asked you, I'm like, have you talked to your counselor about this? And your response was?
No.
And I was like blown away, because it seemed obvious to me that if you're going to tackle this addiction thing to where you're hell-bent on destroying yourself, you should probably address the reasons why you want to destroy yourself, right? Like, what's killing your self-esteem? Because you had a great lucrative career going.
I did.
And how do you feel your addiction affected that?
It affected all of it. So the confidence that I was feeling was false. The energy I was feeling was false. All of it was fake. None of it was real.
Which I would imagine essentially kind of makes you feel like, I have no idea who I am.
I did not.
I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I want out of life.
That whole cliche about, discovering yourself and finding out who you are when you're a teenager, right? I was doing that when I got into recovery, which was in my late 30s. And it's very real. It's extremely real because I'm still trying to figure out who the fuck I am, you know? And I'm 46, for God's sakes.
Yeah, and I mean, for obvious reasons, you were denied that.
Yeah.
For a long time by many different people.
Yes.
That, you know, just wanted to keep you down. And, you know, once again, that's something we can get into another time.
Yeah.
But it all kind of ties in, right? Like, what were you hiding from? What were you self-medicating from? It wasn't just some leg pain, right?
No, it wasn't. It was much deeper than that.
So what I quickly began to realize once you brought me in on this was, number one, anybody's traumas, mental health issues directly ties into addiction problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't like really asking you these questions. You know, I think the root of it, a person with less willpower is going to struggle even harder not addressing the traumas in their life that are leading to their depression, that are leading to them feeling like less of a person, leading them to feel like they need something to mask the pain. You have to dig deep and you have to attack the real demons to fully understand why you were doing this to yourself.
You do, for sure. I was not a person that shared a lot. It was very difficult for me to share anything with anyone. So when I shared it with you, it was a big deal to me. And when you asked me, have you shared this with your counselor? And I'm like, no. And you're like, well, don't you think you should? I asked you to be there with me because I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I could not open up about certain things unless you were there with me, because I knew I wouldn't, because that was the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life.
I'll be honest, I didn't know if that was a good idea at the time. I'm like,
yeah,
I don't want you to use me as a crutch,
right,
to confront what you need to confront.
Understandable.
So it was a matter of time at that point to figure out, all right, I'll show up.
Yeah.
I'll do what I have to do. I will support you in this. But at some point you're going to have to run on your own.
Yeah.
You know, and that was something that I voiced too. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to see you relying solely on me to be able to talk about this. Like, the only way to, like, where you need to be is you need to be able to talk about these things that have happened in your life. You need to be able to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
without it affecting you negatively, right? You need to be confident. You need to own your story, own what's happened to you.
Right.
And, you know, I was saying all that confidently, like, we're going to do this and we'll be good by next week, right? But that obviously wasn't the case.
Ew.
So, you know, I knew I had to be patient, and I knew if we didn't address these things, not only the addiction stuff, because technically you were past it, right? You weren't looking to relapse, but as we know, relapses can come out of nowhere. You know, you never know. And the dissociative issues were happening quite a bit once we started diving into some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to... If we couldn't face our own demons, it was going to hurt our relationship.
Right.
And it was going to make things difficult for us to move on, especially if you stayed closed off the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, we need to be open books here. Like, we've been through some shit, and we need to be able to open up to each other about it.
So the person you remembered back then when we first met, you know, you mentioned the 20-year gap. The person you met back then was a confident person, right?
Oh, yeah. You made all the moves on poor, innocent little me.
Right.
Like, I was just sitting there reading my Bible, and here you came along all dressed in leather. I think you had a whip, too. You were cracking it like, whoosh. You're like, get over here, boy.
So I was this,
I'm going to show you how mama
confident person back then. And I don't know if that was who you were expecting when we ran into each other again. But I think the person who you ran into again after the 20 years and we actually sat down and had a conversation was a shell of a person compared to who I was back then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my memory of who you were, obviously. And, you know, the Facebook lies and all that and the pictures and you were successful and all this. And then, but once we started peeling back what was going on and where you were at that point, it was like, this is not fucking happening. This person that I knew is not just going to fade into nothingness because some fucktards, you know, let that happen. Fuck that. Like, I'm bringing you back and I will carry you halfway up the mountain. And by that point, your legs will hopefully have gained enough strength to carry you the rest of the way. How do you like that analogy?
That was great.
But just in case you slip, I'll be there.
Oh, baby.
Oh. And it hasn't been easy.
No.
You know, it's been a struggle. And
holy fuck, has it been a struggle.
You know, there's been great steps forward and, you know, a lot of steps back at the same time. But
yeah,
I think you're in that. Like, the fact that we're even having this conversation right now is a testament to what you've overcome.
Yeah. Dude, I wouldn't have been able to have this conversation without fucking breaking out in fucking tears like midway through. Not even. Not even.
I feel like you were close there.
Because it's emotional.
It is. It's your fucking life.
Yeah.
It's your life. It's so much time wasted. And, you know, I got my own, you know, periods of life that I wasted on poor me shit, you know. Yeah. And that's trivializing it, but that's ultimately what it is.
It's true.
You know, you're just feeling sorry for yourself and it's the whole world's fault. How could this happen to me? Why am I here? And, you know, all that shit, right?
Fuck, man. When I think about the years that I spent wasted on addiction, where I could have been, woulda, shoulda, coulda, right? Fuck. Everything happens for a reason. I know it's a fucking cliche. Everybody says it, but it's true. If my experience or what I fucking went through can help someone else, then great. Because I was meant to save that person. That's fucking awesome.
And that's something we talked about, you know, using this, like, let's not let it be for nothing. If we can use this to help somebody else, rewrite their own story and regain control of their life, then it wasn't all for nothing.
Right.
You know, like my self-rebuilding was something I did myself. I just got sick of feeling nothing, right? And I knew I had to make improvements in my life, quit smoking, quit drinking so much, quit eating shitty food, start taking care of my body and working out and realizing that I was in a toxic situation that I needed to get away from and it was destroying me. I did all that on my own. So when it came to you coming to me about you wanted to achieve the same thing, and I told you, I'm like, I can't do this for you.
Right.
I can support you. I can be there when you fall to pick you up, but it's not going to be, oh, poor baby. It's going to be a smack on the ass and get back the fuck in there, kid. Game's still going.
Right.
You know, and that's how we've proceeded. And you brought up before the show one of the great sayings coined by yours truly here. And what was it, the first one?
That was one of my, so I have a little section in my notes that says, Shit Dave Says.
Which was the initial working name for a podcast with my brother.
Yeah. It's basically, in life, there's always two options to any situation. Either do that shit or say fuck it. Shit Dave Says.
That is copywritten. Care of True Love and Orgasms. Copyright 2022.
But it's so fucking true.
You're free to use it, but you owe me $10 if you do.
It's true. It's true. So it's two options to any situation.
And basically what that boils down to is do it or don't.
Yeah.
You know, don't waterboard me with bullshit. You know, like, oh, but what about this and what about this and what about that and what about this?
There's always going to be a what about, man.
Tell what to fuck off and it to suck my dick.
Yes.
That's not mine. That's Kid Rock. But
yes.
enjoy that. But it's true, you know, so many people want to make excuses for themselves and, oh, I can't do this because, or I can't accomplish this because, or this person is making me feel this way because, fuck that.
Yep.
You are in charge of you, nobody else. Well, except for me. She's in charge of me. But that's only because I let her.
It's only because I let her, right? Right, babe?
Yeah, I let you? Is that okay? I'm going to delete. No, it's true.
It's true.
There, man, when I stepped out of my previous situation, or when I made the decision to step out of that, I was like, I'm not going to be responsible for anybody ever again, mm-hmm. other than my kids. I don't want to deal with your shortcomings and your I can'ts and what ifs and blah, 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 right? I don't want to deal with it.
Right.
And I am not going to ever, because I hadn't up to that point, ever give somebody 100% of me.
Yeah.
So that control is given and you give the same back and that's what makes us work.
Yeah.
And that's something we agreed on early on. It was like, all right, this is a very profound and powerful thing that we have. Mm-hmm. So we got to go all in.
Yeah.
So do that shit or say fuck it, right?
Right. I agree. I think if it was half-assed, like from any of us, I don't think it would have worked. And I think we could feel that too.
There was too much on the line.
Yeah.
And
we're not getting any younger, man. Fuck.
Yeah, there's that. There's much less time to waste. And man, when I seen you at that kind of rock bottom,
mm-hmm.
all that fucking bothered me because I know you,
yeah.
You know, I know what you're capable of. I can see it in you. And it was always a big thing. Like, this is what I see. And you're like, well, that's not me. That's not you right now. That's not what you're portraying right now because you're feeling this way,
mm-hmm.
but that's not what I see. And I know what I see and I'm confident and my ability to see people. We need to get you to a place where you can see what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something to me recently.
I did.
Along these lines, didn't you? What did you say?
I did. Why did you gotta call me out?
Because that's what we do here, babe. We give them everything, every last bit. This could be the straw that breaks the camel's back for someone else take charge of their
that's
lives.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
What did you say to me?
Fuck, man. You suck. I said, you kept telling me for a long time what you saw when you looked at me. And I said, baby, when I look in the mirror recently, I said, I'm starting to see what you see in me.
Boom, bitches. Gotcha.
Thanks for calling me out, ass.
No problem. So it's a big deal for me.
Yeah.
You know, because we got a bunch of years in here and it's been a long road.
Yeah.
And I knew that was there. And I knew all you needed was to start having some successes
and
that you made happen. You know, not stuff that anybody did for you. This is all about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that does get exhausting. I can imagine listening to this right now, like, Jesus fucking Christ, why don't you hold her fucking hand for?
Right?
That's not the case. It was, yeah. I'm going to lead you to the edge,
yeah,
and it's up to you what to do from there.
Oh, dude, it was hard, man. So hard. I had never experienced, number one, when we started unpacking all the bullshit, I had never, up until that point, experienced a panic attack. I didn't even know that's what I was having until you said you're having a panic attack. And you fucking flew over like fucking Superman.
You know, I got to be honest with you. Throughout that process, it was like, how do I know about all this shit?
Yeah.
Like, is it the years of podcasts and YouTube videos and studying psychology as a hobby? Just as a hobby for no particular reason.
You were preparing yourself for me, baby. You didn't even know it.
That's a conclusion we came to. I was like, I realized that night in Wegmans when I looked at you that my entire life was preparing me for us. Did you hear that splash? See, we still end up joking about it because we still have trouble with it, with feelings. We do. But
we
it's
do.
True.
God,
but it's 100%
you suck.
True. Oh, she's crying. Got her. Got her again. Damn.
You're such an asshole.
There's paper towels right behind you, dear.
It's true, though. As we joke, but it's true.
You know, you have to celebrate life. You ever hear that fucking cliche nonsense? I think it's like on napkins or something at fucking Party City. Celebrate life. You really do. When you reach milestones in life, so when you overcome crazy shit that's happened to you and you get on the other side and you start to feel good about yourself and you have these victories, you got to celebrate it.
You do.
Celebrate it. Congratulate yourself. And then you're on to the next challenge.
Yes.
Right? Make the celebration short. You know, like when I used to when I coached baseball, when the kids, you know, they'd make it home or hit a home run or hit some of their buddies in, I was like, you go ahead and you celebrate what you did. What you did was awesome, but get over it before you get back to the dugout because we still got a game to play.
Yeah.
And that translates to life, and that's how I coach my teams.
It is.
It was everything we do here is an allegory for life. This isn't just about playing baseball and getting home and catching the ball, hitting the ball, and all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Sports are designed to teach you about life, that you need to work together towards a common goal. And that's what we do. We're a sports team.
We do. We do. And I think that's what we lacked previously. You know? And, man.
I think the intention was there. I think what we lacked was a strong link. You're only as strong as your weakest link, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're... Well, how can I... If you have to move a dresser into a house, let's say, and a dresser's heavy as shit, and you're holding up your side of the dresser, and the other side of the dresser is dragging on the floor, that's going to make your life real fucking difficult, especially once you get to the stairs, right? Both sides need to be supported.
It's a pretty descriptive analogy.
Why is that so funny, babe? What? Dressers are heavy.
An ass. It's true, though.
Especially if it's real wood.
Oh, God.
And I'll tell you this. I've drugged my share of dressers over the years.
Same. Same. But it's true, though. It's true. Previously, I had gotten used to keeping shit in. I was never one to share what was going on in my life.
Same. Stuff it down.
Nothing.
Nobody cares.
Exactly.
It's your problem.
Stuff it down. Nobody knew anything. For fuck's sake. When I was separated from my first marriage, my mom didn't find out about it until a month later. And it wasn't through me. It was because my brother told her because he was concerned about me because I wasn't eating. I was depressed and all this shit. He's the one that called her and told her about it. I didn't because I didn't want my family to know my business. That's just how it was. That's
because,
how I operated.
Because we both come from a long line of folks in our lives that tend to, that would make the problem about them. We go to them for help and they'd make it about themselves. No. No, not them. The other people. Like relationships, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you had an issue,
mm-hmm.
if something bothered you,
uh-huh.
you would go to this person and be like, hey, I don't like this. And somehow, some way, tell me if this sounds familiar. Somehow, some way, all of a sudden, you're getting talked to because like you did something to them. Like, wait a minute. Didn't we start off, this was my problem, and now you're making it about you?
Mm-hmm.
That in itself will make you close off
mm-hmm.
and not want to talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Selfish fucks.
It happened.
I'll cut that out.
It happened often. But yeah, that was the norm. So I stopped talking. I stopped relaying anything I felt, thought, or expressed was just, I stopped completely.
I can't think of anybody else that I'm familiar with. I'm sure maybe somebody's out there that did what you did. You not only had this severe addiction problem, mm-hmm. but you started and completed the recovery process, and nobody knew.
Yeah.
Nobody knew a thing.
Yeah.
You did it all on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still had the nerve to sit there in front of me and be like, I'm not confident. I can't do that. Like, motherfucker, look what you did.
Yeah. See, to me, it wasn't a big deal. Now, when you asked me, you were like, do your kids know about it? My two oldest children, you know, who are in their late 20s. It's not that I didn't think that they would care. It's just that I don't know what I thought, to be honest with you. But
was it the stigma of maybe your mom's an addict? That, like,
see,
and
here's
they're gonna
the thing.
See you differently?
When you grow up in that, when you grow up in addiction, in the throes of addiction, like your family seeing it, watching it, you try to prevent at all costs your children experiencing that and going through it, right? Mm-hmm. So from the second, I'm talking about the fucking millisecond, my children were able to comprehend the English language, I talked to them about addiction. I talked to them about drugs, not doing it and why. I talked to them about my family. I talked to them about all of it, right?
And this is years before you ran into your
years
issue.
Before I even got into my addiction. But I talked to them about it because that was my biggest fear, you know, that I would become my mother, worried every night where my kids were. And that was a big issue for me. So I talked to them about it from the beginning. And when I started going through it myself, I couldn't talk to them about it. I couldn't go to them and tell them I'm going through this myself, right? It wasn't until I graduated the program, got a certificate and all of that, that I was like, you know what? I'm gonna talk to them about it and tell them what I went through. And when I did, I was surprised. My daughter, and it fucking A. Christina, she was extremely supportive. And she was like, Mom, I'm so proud of you. I can't believe, why didn't you say anything? You know, and all this stuff. And I'm like, because I didn't want you to share in that. Like, basically, I didn't want you to worry. I didn't want you to be concerned about it.
Yeah, because I could imagine just from my own thought process of just feeling like you failed them.
Yeah.
You know, that you let that happen in your
yep.
life. You know, I take a lot of things that have happened to me, I take that way.
Yeah.
It's like, I let this happen, right?
And yeah.
It's, which is good in a way, but at the same time, they kind of need to know. You
yeah.
know, especially, if they were like 5, 6 years old or whatever, I wouldn't say tell them. But
here was the thing that surprised me the most. They were like, when? You were always working. You were always on. Like, you were always working. Like, you were, my bills were paid. I did everything that I needed to do as a parent, right? I was there for them when they needed me. I was what they call a functioning addict. But fuck, man, behind closed doors.
I think a higher percentage of addicts, that's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has this, cliche image in their head of a junkie like laying in the gutter, you know, and
yeah.
that's not the case. Like,
no.
People are out there getting shit done. I was that way.
Yeah.
I was that way, abusing alcohol and drugs and all kinds of shit, but I never missed a day of work.
Yep.
You
Same.
Know, and
Same.
I was there and I kept my bills paid the best I could. I wasn't making a shit ton of money. The kids had what they needed, but I was just like this fucking zombie walking through life.
Suspended animation, I call it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Suspended animation.
Yes, man.
I feel like that term's been said here before.
It's so true, though.
And, you know, the big thing, like you said, a year ago, we couldn't have this conversation. Like,
nope.
Between you and I, sure. But sitting down in the studio here and, you know.
Having it? No.
Telling the world this without, you know. It would have affected you for weeks.
Yeah.
And so much progress you've made. So you need to know how proud of you I am for everything. For everything. Even the stuff that you accomplished before me. Like, stepping into that recovery process with no support, zero. It was just you. And sticking to it, do you have any idea how much strength that takes? Like, you thought, you treated it like it was nothing. I am willing to bet you couldn't find me three people that could do the same. Not counting me.
Yeah.
But it's inspiring to me, you know, to see how far you've come. Like, I knew you had this in you. This is what I seen. I knew this was you. And I was going to stop at nothing until you seen it. Because you have so much to offer. So much that you were cheating yourself from, like, accomplishing things in life. And now you're starting to do it. Like, we're out here talking to the world right now. All 32 of them. Tell your fucking friends, people. Tell your friends about true love and orgasms, all right? It's not just smut, all right? We have some good conversations down here. Tell your friends. Bring them in. Let's build this thing up, all right? And everybody that's listening right now, you're at the ground level. You're our people, all right? And we're not going to forget about you.
Yeah.
Tell your friends.
I think the only person I told about any of it was Michelle. Michelle was the only person I told when I was in it. That was basically it.
Was she helpful?
She was. She was proud of me. She was proud of me for sure. You know, that I went to get help.
Yeah, and then to sit there amongst strangers.
Yeah.
And lay out these horrible truths about yourself that I'm sure you didn't feel great about.
Babe, it's not. It's not easy. I didn't even talk about the worst part of it until you came into my life.
Well, I can understand. I know how difficult it is for you because I know who you are. I know how difficult it is for you to open up.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you were very forthcoming with me with a lot of things because, you know, I guess I'm just easy to talk to. I don't fucking know. But, like, sitting through the therapy sessions where you had to, like, you, it was a fight to get it. I'm like, babe, you got to open up. This, her hearing the information wasn't important. What was important was that you could say the words and then just get it out of your body. Just right. Project the words out into the universe and hear yourself say it. That in itself was therapeutic.
Yes. She was counselor number 3 before I said anything. Yeah.
So, I think I said this already, but I feel that it's crazy that that is not a major part of addiction recovery. Why are you doing this? What happened to you? No matter how big or how small. Okay, go ahead.
I think it is. I just think, like me, when it comes to addicts, saying that piece is the most difficult part. Because once you confront that, then you have to work on it, right? You have to work on getting past that. You have to work on working through it.
Yeah, it's like 90%, I think, of going into the next chapter of life.
Yes.
Is putting that stuff behind you.
Yes.
And owning it and controlling your own narrative, right? Yeah. So I feel like if I was sitting in the counselor's chair and somebody had come to me with these issues, I would pose that question. Like, listen, I know there's more to this story. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't just about you using drugs or alcohol or whatever. There's more here. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to confront this at some point if you want to progress past where we're at right now. You don't have to tell me right now. You don't have to tell me tomorrow. But at some point, you're going to have to confront this. Mm-hmm. And I think that sends somebody home with something to think about.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was, like I said, I grew up with addiction, surrounded by addiction, and my brother is one of them. He has been through it since he was 9 years old, which I didn't learn until recently. We were talking about, you know, our addiction and our struggles with addiction, and he finally opened up to me, and he's in his early 50s. And man, it made everything that I witnessed, everything that I saw him go through, makes sense. And that was difficult, because growing up watching him going through it, I was always of the mindset of, how can you put mom through that? How can you, you know, how can you do this and how can you do that and blah, blah, blah. Never once stopping to think why he was doing it, you know.
Or just the fact that he was not able to stop.
Yeah.
And, you know, how deeply addiction controls you.
Yes.
But for still, sure. I go back to, like, you did it.
Yeah.
You took that control.
Yeah.
You took that control even when you didn't think you had the strength to take that control.
Yeah.
I'm really beaten at the death, aren't I? It's a big deal for me. It's impressive.
It's true. It's true. It's
And I get to look at my girl and be like, that's a bad bitch right there. And you better watch your fucking step, because she going to get you.
It was not easy, man.
You don't understand.
It was not easy. It's not easy. Believe me, it was not easy. I didn't even know I was going through addiction or withdrawal until, like I said, you mentioned it. When I first experienced that, and I'm like, man, I'm feeling like this and like that. And you looked at me and you were like, I think you're going through withdrawal. I'm like, no, no way. I think I'm just coming down with the flu. And you're like, nope, you're going through withdrawal.
And how did we fix that?
Weed, man.
More drugs.
You were like, you need to smoke a joint. I remember that. And it instantly took that away. Took the feelings of feeling sick away. And I'm like, when that happened, I didn't feel, oh my God, weed helped me. No, I felt, holy fuck, I was going through withdrawal. He was right. That's what I felt. And then I was scared. From that day forward, I was fucking scared. I never said it to you, but from that day forward, I was afraid. I was like, if this is how I feel now, I can't stop. And I knew that then. I'm like, I can't stop right now. This is how I'm going to keep feeling. And I knew that going forward. And it only got worse from there.
Yeah, and then you end up getting involved with these pill mills, mm-hmm. that were a huge problem throughout this time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just, pain management, once again in quotes.
Yep.
Which was just, here, whatever you want, here you go. More pills, more pills, more pills, more pills. And now that they've got caught and all this shit's going on with the opioid crisis, yep, and all this shit, right?
It's a fucking shitstorm.
Now you walk into the doctor and they treat you like, yep, you're a fucking scumbag.
They treat me like I'm a scumbag. Yep.
Everybody, even like, yeah, every time I broke my fucking foot and, yes, they acted like I was just trying to get pills. I'm like, dude, just shoot it up with, yeah, I don't need to be high, just fucking make it stop.
The same fucking doctors that got you addicted,
yeah,
are the ones that look at you like you're the junkie.
Yeah. So, yes, to put that in perspective, the guy that you buy your coke from, you show up one day and he's like, oh, you scumbag, you shouldn't be doing this. Ew, what's wrong with you? Like, you're the fucking problem. Like,
it's
no
true.
You're the supplier.
Dude,
man,
I remember when you had that bad fucking toothache and you were ready to fucking kill yourself.
Like, literally the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. You, like, I was on the brink of, yeah, I was considering killing myself, like hurting myself just to stop the fucking pain.
Anybody who's had that toothache, you know what we're talking about.
Holy fuck. This was the, yep, I don't even know how to explain it. Mm-hmm. And I was on a job. I'm on a well site. Mm-hmm. And I left. Like, I've never left a well site, mm-hmm, for anything. Like, I broke my foot. And I never missed a day of work. Mm-hmm. I limped around on fucking gravel and rocks and climbed on rigs, like, just kept doing my job, right? This shit, I couldn't even open my eyes.
Yeah.
Like, it was unbearable. And I went to an emergency room in the middle of fucking nowhere. And that's how they treated me.
Yep.
They took my blood pressure and they said I was at stroke level blood, yeah, pressure. I'm like, is that proof enough,
yeah,
of the fucking pain that I'm in? Or they just assumed I was going through withdrawal.
Yeah.
They didn't do shit. They're like, take ibuprofen. So in order to take the edge off, I think they gave me like 800 milligram ibuprofens. Mm-hmm. I had to take 5 of them just to knock it down enough to where I could open my eyes.
Yeah.
And that only lasted about a half an hour. Mm-hmm. I eventually had to have surgery, which, and it turned out, I think the reason that was so severe, that particular tooth sat right on a nerve.
Oof.
And when they went, normally you go get a tooth pulled, right? They just yank it out. No siree. They had to put me under, and it was a surgical fucking procedure.
Yeah.
Which is, that was an experience. And I went back to work the next day. We left the job, went and got fucking knocked out. I remember waking up, and I'm like, are we doing this? And they're like, it's done. I'm like, oh, no shit. So the nurse is there, and my coworker's there, and they want to take me into the recovery room. And they're like, she's like, okay, grab his. I'm like, I'm fine. Don't fucking touch me. And I go to stand up, and my legs are just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I almost went down right there. I'm like, okay. Then they're holding me. And the whole time, she's like, checking my pulse, and she's looking at me. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm good, you know? And, mm-hmm. like, I guess I recovered quickly compared to most or whatever. And then we walked out of there, and we went right back to work.
Yeah.
Felt a little shitty for a couple of days because I had a gaping hole in my fucking mouth. But, you know, we made it happen.
I will never forget that. You were in so much pain, babe. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't.
But that's the shit. That's the shit that I'm talking about. Like, when that whole opioid pandemic was happening, instead of, like, regulating and figuring out what was going on, no, they put more salespeople out there to sell more and get more people fucking addicted.
Dude, they were giving incentive.
Yeah, they were pushing that shit.
They were taking the doctors out to dinner. They were giving them cash incentive. Oh, we'll give you this free cruise or trip to Hawaii if you push this many pills this month. And they're just writing scripts. They caused the fucking problem and then had the nerve to turn around and say, it's y'all's fault.
Yeah.
No, that's not how this fucking works. Yeah. Now, like, so the ex and my daughters worked in pain management. They just straight up cut these people off.
Yeah.
They were like, nope, we're not giving you that shit no more. You're taking this now, which was a non-narcotic painkiller. Just straight up, like, no weaning you off or, you know, let's figure out a way to... So you don't have... Nope. These people were coming in losing their fucking minds.
Yeah. And what does that do?
Sends you straight into withdrawal.
Yep.
And then people are showing up at the office, throwing chairs, trying to crawl through the fucking window, attacking people. Doctors got shot over this stuff.
Yep.
You just made the problem worse.
Yeah. There was no weaning. There was no...
weaning.
Alternative. There was no, hey, this is what's going on. This is what's happening. We did this to you, but... Nope, there was none of that.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
No culpability.
None of it.
Man.
No, yeah, and now when you go to a doctor, we've experienced it. We've both experienced it. I fell. My fucking knee, I couldn't even move my leg left or right.
Yeah, you fucking tore your ACL?
ACL or MCL or whatever.
One of the Cs.
Go to the emergency room. And they see that I have a history of Suboxone.
So they immediately start looking at you side-eyed.
Yep. Immediately start looking at me like, oh. And they're like, well, she's... And then I hear them, the whispers in the background, right? Mind you, they see in the x-ray I have a torn ACL or MCL or whatever. Can't move it left or right. And the whispers in the background, that's what fucking bugs me. I tell my counselor this, and she's like, I know, unfortunately, this is the common blah, 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 right? It's fucking annoying, because what do? You just fucking suffer, or do you, as someone who's in an addiction recovery, what do you do?
Well, in general now, like, they're afraid to prescribe anything to anybody.
Which,
like,
I don't
even know if these drugs still exist. At this point, like, you just had surgery, and they're like, take Tylenol, Motrin.
Yeah.
You know, they went in there and, like, incinerated your insides.
They did. I, to be honest with you, I was a little concerned, but it was not bad. But that's just me. It could be, anybody else could have been different.
So your last surgery a year ago was the same thing. They didn't give you anything.
They didn't.
You dealt with it. I think your pain threshold's a little higher than most.
I think probably because of this bullshit that I dealt with before. That's probably why.
I think a person of lesser constitution might not have done so well.
Maybe. Possibly.
She's over there trying not to act like a badass. Like, you're fucking cut it open, take that shit, I'll be fine.
Listen, they singed my insides. It was fucking brutal, but it just, I didn't, I think a lot of it has to do with I didn't want to seem like I needed it, I guess. I don't know. So we're so, like, as humans, right, we're so conditioned to, we feel pain, here's a pill to stop it. Here's this, here's a pill to make it feel better. And I think through addiction counseling and all that shit, I realized that there are other ways to deal with pain. It doesn't have to be all medication. And I think that's, that was the big issue with me. It was, if I had a headache, a pill would fix it. If I had a pain or a twinge or whatever, a pill would fix it. And I needed to find other ways to cope. And I think that's, that was the main issue with me anyway.
Yeah. I think, I'm similar to that, you know, like it was always mind over matter. Like, yeah. I don't like taking anything. I don't like taking Motrin. I don't like taking Tylenol.
Yeah.
Especially for prolonged periods of time. I don't like taking any pills, you know, cause I feel like they just fuck you up even more. So, you know, anything I can deal with, I deal with. If it gets to the point, like, multiple days or whatever, and it's starting to, like, make me nasty or something, then I'll, you know, take some relief.
Yeah.
Now, that fucking tooth pain, I would have taken a shot of morphine right to
the dick. I was going
to
say, that was...
Right to the dick to make that shit go away.
That was fucking brutal, man.
Whatever.
Right to the dick.
Straight in it. Put it right in the hole.
That was fucking brutal. I don't know how you got through that shit.
It was not fun.
It was not.
So what I found out through that whole thing, the only thing that would kill the pain was ice cold water.
Which is weird to me.
It is very weird. But it's, they call it a hot tooth.
Okay.
Which, whatever, fucking stupid ass name. but it only works for a couple seconds. So basically you're walking around with fucking cold water all day. And spit it out, and just run it over it, and it would kill the pain for like 4 seconds.
Jesus.
And then you just feel it coming back, like, ooh, and then you just try to ride it out. I didn't sleep for
probably like 4 days. I remember. Yeah. I remember, babe. You were fucking delirious, man.
Yeah.
That was brutal. That was fucking brutal.
Just sitting over there like, kill me.
Oh, God, I felt so bad. You're like, I'm going to kill myself, like, tonight. I'm like, oh, okay. What the fuck?
Just tie a belt up in a hotel room. And done.
Oh, God. I don't know how you got through that, because I can relate. I know the pain. I know the pain of that fucking toothache so bad.
Yeah. Like, you hear stories about, like, guys on the battlefield that get injured severely and are like, just put me out. Put me out of my misery. I get it.
As for the addiction, though, I think you're right. I think figuring out what the issue is that has you, what is it, the trauma that got you addicted in the first place, that's the first step. I think that's the big thing, because I didn't start even thinking about getting off Suboxone until we started dealing with that.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember the day that I said it to you. I'm like, yeah. I think this is the root of everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's all connected, and you, at the time, didn't think anything was connected. The traumas you experienced as a child.
Nope.
The traumas you experienced as an adult.
Nope.
The addiction, the constant running away from everything, the you self-sabotaging, the dissociation. You thought it was all these, like, separate things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I think this is all connected.
Yeah.
Then once we started diving into that, that's when progress really started to happen.
Oh yeah.
And then it started to also connect dots for me in my own life and stupid things that I had done.
Yeah.
And deficiencies I had and problems I had with my childhood and all this shit, and it helped me come to grips with a lot of things in my life as well.
Yeah. And don't think it was just all of a sudden we figured this out and it was like perfect. Fuck no.
No, this was a fucking nightmare.
It was a nightmare.
Like, there are a lot of ups and downs, screaming matches.
Yes.
You know, there's something in the human brain that it almost refuses to deal with trauma.
It was, we were rejecting it fucking big time.
Yeah, because it's easier to run and hide, right? Yep. It's easier to run and hide, push everybody away, leave me alone, I'm fine, blah, blah, blah. But
especially two people like us.
If you, yeah, alphas.
Yeah.
If you want to be, if you have this image of yourself and you really want to be that, you want to be a productive human being who can wake up and feel good about the day, you got to deal with this shit.
Yes.
There's no way around it. You got to do it.
Deal, man. Deal
and it starts it. It starts with you. You're the only one. You're the only one responsible for you, right? Ultimately. Yes, there's people that care about you that want the best for you, but nobody can do it for you. You know, I couldn't make you come to these realizations. All I could do was suggest things, right?
Yeah.
Bring up talking points. And basically, you and I would talk through it thoroughly.
Yes.
Then bring it up in counseling. All right, this is what we addressed. This is what we've seen. And this is how we feel about it now.
Yeah.
What do you think? You know?
I soon realized, actually, after we started talking and breaking down everything, I forgot who I was. Like,
that's very common.
I forgot who I was. Like, so the person you met back then was a person not in the throes of addiction yet when we first met. I wasn't in the throes of addiction yet.
Yeah, you were just in your mind having a good time. And
yeah.
I was a fucking mess at that point.
Yeah, I wasn't in addiction yet. I hadn't experienced any of that yet. I wasn't feeling any of that yet. So the person that you saw was who I was in that moment. I was this confident person, right? And I wanted that back because that's who you remembered from back then. And I'm like, man, who he thinks I am, that's not me.
Yeah, but through it all, through the journey, like, that person, you never get that person back, right?
No.
You become this new version of you.
Yeah.
Who has learned and drawn lessons from all these experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. True love and orgasms. This is,
I was waiting for that.
So yeah, this is, you know, this show is the culmination of these lessons. So
20 listen, plus years, man.
Listen the fuck up. You guys know how lucky you are to be hearing this? Do you even appreciate us at all?
Do you love me?
I'm talking to you. Look at me.
Oh, God. I love you, babe.
I love you. So what do you think? Any more thoughts on this?
If you are in the throes of addiction and you need help and you tell yourself, I can't do this anymore, there are websites. There are open 24/7, NAAA. All those, if everybody has a phone at their fingertips, everybody has the internet at their fingertips, no matter where you are, you are able to reach out to someone that can help you. There's a 24/7 hotline for any of it, all of it. If you are in the Buffalo area, I would say ECMC is the best place to go to.
The ECMC clinic, correct?
Yes. ECMC clinic is, I'm telling you, they give a shit. They hold you accountable. They have counseling, doctors, all of it. That's what worked for me.
Yeah, there's plenty of options out there. And there's options on top of options. And if the first one you go to isn't it, go to another
one. Keep looking.
Keep going. Don't give up. I was saying, it's up to you to step up and, you know, take care of you, but you do need help in the beginning.
Yep.
You need somebody that's going to set you up, tell you what needs to be done, and then along the lines, you're going to find your strength and you're going to start to do things for yourself, and you're going to hold yourself accountable. If you want to get better, there's ways out there to do it, and it's not going to be easy, but you need to tell somebody. You need to reach out, get the help you need. All it takes is a Google search. And if your first step needs to be telling us, talk to us. We'll point you in the right direction.
Yes.
You know, we've obviously, as we've discussed, we have some experience with this.
Very much so.
Come again?
We do. We have a lot of experience with it. Not just with ourselves, but we have experience with family members in it. You know? Mm-hmm. All of it. Mm-hmm. Man. Fucking all of it. Since, Jesus. Since I can remember. I've been around it. I've seen it. All of it. The effects of addiction. How that affects the family.
I'd say at least once to twice a year we hear from somebody we haven't heard from in a long time talking about somebody else that has died because of this.
Yes.
Way too early.
Yeah. I do. Drew was one of them.
No names.
Dressed up. Who else? People that I've grown up with. God. It's brutal, man. We've lost a lot of people through addiction. It's sad.
Yeah, I would assume most people out there.
Yeah.
Can think of a couple people out of their lives that have fell victim to this.
And you know what? I count ourselves lucky because nowadays everything is laced with fentanyl and
I don't understand that. Like, babe, why?
Everything is so like chemically altered, everything. And I think about that, you know, like if we would have been going through what we were going through back then, nowadays, we would have been dead. We would have been dead by now.
Yeah, I mean, you think about how many different people that you partied with.
Oh, like, yeah.
Just somebody you didn't even fucking know.
Hell
you had
yeah.
No idea where that bag came from. I was
nope.
Like, sure, fucking chop them up. Let's do this,
yeah,
you know?
We would have been dead, for sure.
And just the fact that the difficulty of recovery and holding yourself accountable and being able to get to a point where you don't want to use again. A lot of people relapse, right? They get clean and then one tiny little thing happens in their life and, oh, I need to use again. And then they're right back down the fucking spiral.
It's realizing that that you're using those excuses as a crutch, right? It's realizing that.
It's the accountability.
Being honest with yourself. You got to be honest with yourself.
Yeah, you got to hold yourself accountable
for
your actions. Because, like I said, this all started with a choice.
Yep.
Right. Nobody forced you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that happens. But for the most part, you know, it was either you made a decision. Yeah. Either you made a decision to engage in the party or you trusted the advice of a doctor.
Yes. Yeah. With me, it started with the advice of a doctor. That's how it started.
Yeah. But at the same time, you were doing a lot of self-medicating in other places, right?
After the fact, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
After that, I did. That was, I'm telling you, that was that devil on the fucking shoulder. You should take two. It'll make you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then she was chirping in your ear.
And then here I was with the pain. I'm like, fuck, should I take two? But half of one makes me feel like this. If I take two, that's going to make me feel sick, right? Well, maybe if I eat something and then I'll take two, maybe it'll, you know, even out with the sickness that I'll feel because I took two pills, right? So I ate something, took two pills, and then that was a wrap. From that day forward, it escalated. From that day forward. Yeah. I wonder where she's at now.
Hopefully in a good place. And she overcame her issues.
I hope so.
But you just never know. Because like it takes so many people and they never get over it, man.
No, it's difficult. It really is. It's hard.
So I think I think that was a good introduction into this world for us and the listeners. We will definitely be touching on this again in the future.
So much more to know.
If you guys, you know, anybody's out there, if you need help, it's available. If you're not sure where, you know, reach out to us, trueloveandorgasms@gmail.com. We'll send you to the right place. No, we're not going to put you on the show. We will just give you the right direction, you know, so you can get some help for yourself. All other situations, same email if you guys want to reach us out to us. Same as always, Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. We're everywhere, guys. Come hang out with us. Come say hi. Tell a friend. Let's help this thing. Let's make this thing grow. So,
yes.
Until next time, guys, gentlemen, keep it fresh and clean. And ladies,
keep your situation situated. And if you need help for drug and alcohol rehab, it's 844-485-0812.
Make the call.
Bye.